Welcome to Mormon Expression Voices. We're back today, not only with one voice, but with four. We have a brother and sister with their spouses, and they're going to share their stories with us today. We have brother and sister named Craig and Melanie, and they have their spouses. Craig is married to Sarah, and Melanie is married to Mathis. So thank you very much for coming.
Yeah, no problem.
So let's begin with the brother and sister, because that's one reason I was excited to have you on, because I wanted to hear the family dynamic of people who explored the Mormon religion together. So, Craig, why don't you start with a little background of your family history of Mormonism?
Well, Melanie and I were both raised in the church. Our parents were married in the temple. Dad was a convert, and Mom was also married in the church. It goes back to a long, line of pioneer stock. And so church was always really important growing up. We always went to church and, had the kind of family that tried to do family home evening and scripture study, sometimes was more successful at that than others, but it was never an issue of, would we go to church or not. It was always just there. And when I was growing up, I really enjoyed the church. I just had that kind of personality that it fit with me. And a lot of my closest friends, as a teenager or whatever, weren't members of the church. We grew up in the Las Vegas area in Nevada. So there were a lot of members, but that just wasn't really the group that I hung with. But the church itself, I always, was pretty into it and truly believed it, got a testimony at an early age, and that was just my life plan. So that was kind of my experience. Melanie, how was it for you growing up?
Pretty similar. I always believed the church, and I was fully bought in. I would say as a teenager, there were times that, of course, I still believed, but I felt a lot of guilt for never being perfect enough. So there was some heartache there.
That's
as a teenager. But overall, I did it just how you did, basically, and then went to BYU and was fully in.
Yeah, and of course, I served a mission and went to Bolivia, the La Paz mission, and really enjoyed my mission as well. And even now, sometimes I think back and think, what would it have been like if I had spent those 2 years doing something else, going to college or whatever? But I can't say that I really regret it, just because there were so many experiences I had that I valued, and it was just a really big eye-opener to go to a place that was so different from what I had grown up with. Mathis, Sarah, what about you guys?
Well, I was also born and raised in the church, and it was absolutely 100% totally my life. And I think I could not imagine ever not being Mormon. In fact, when I was in fourth grade, I got into an actual fist fight. Because some kids at school told me that my religion wasn't true, and I told them they were being stupid about it, and they said the only way to resolve it is to have a fight, and the winner of the fight had the true religion.
That's what Jesus
taught. Makes perfect sense.
Grown up in Utah.
No, that was in New Mexico, actually, at the time. I'm a military brat, so we were all over the place. But that was in New Mexico, and yes, I did end up in the principal's office. I was very ashamed. But yeah, I was always like a staunch believer in the church. Very gung-ho. It was always what I wanted to do and be, and kind of became more problematic as time went on, which I'm sure we'll get into. But I really, really loved being in the church.
For me, I fit the typical Mormon narrative to a T. If you looked back and said, okay, well, there's the Mormon kid that does everything perfectly, that was... I bought into that mold, and I fit right into it just fine. It was like I did everything I needed to make sure I was in the mold, not stepping outside. So
you enjoyed it also growing up?
Yeah, it was just something I don't think I ever even allowed myself to even think, okay, there's a different way. It was, this is the way it is, and that's what I'm going to do, and that's what I did. So it was fit in perfectly.
And so once I got back from my mission, I guess moving on to the next phase. Well, before and after my mission, I attended BYU for a little bit. And right when I got back, I moved into an apartment complex, and Melanie was there in the same apartment complex. So yes. We were up there together, and that was fun.
Hey, I was there too.
Exactly. We were getting to that. And that is where I met my lovely wife, Sarah. And so we, of course, hit it off and had that typical Mormon narrative. You know, after like 2 months we were of dating, we were engaged. And then, what was it? 5 months later,
we actually had a 7-month courtship, which is really long for Mormons, apparently.
Wow. Oh, I've heard of longer, but, yeah, so that was us, got married at BYU. Neither of us had graduated yet, although Sarah was close. But after that, I actually switched majors and transferred down to UNLV in Las Vegas and finished up my, you know, schooling there. And we also had a child, Cameron, and he was born, what, about a year and a half after we got married?
Right? 2004.
Just under that.
Yeah. So,
yes.
Around that time. So it was pretty quick. We didn't waste a whole lot of time with that. And, of course, we love him dearly. And, but that is sort of the beginning of
that was the beginning of the end.
Our, issues started. So, Sarah, I'll let you go from there.
So we had Cameron, and, when he was about 2 years old, we thought, oh, let's do this again. This was so much fun the first time around. And we thought we'd add on to the family, and we had no trouble at all conceiving Cameron. It was a breeze, but for whatever reason, I was never able to get pregnant again. And after years and years of testing, it was the hardest thing to go through because we did all kinds of testing. They never could figure it out. Meanwhile, I was going to church like a good Mormon girl, and the lessons I was getting constantly in Relief Society were, you need to have a bunch of kids. That was my whole purpose, apparently, was to be a mother. And I thought, does one even count? And we had moved into an apartment. We had moved back up to Utah into North Salt Lake. And there was we kind of lived in a young family ward. There were two primaries and three nurseries. And there were a lot of kids there. And I was in the Relief Society presidency at the time, and I remember one day I was sitting up in the front and I was counting all the visibly pregnant women that I could see in the room. There were 13. And I knew there was quite a few others that were in the primary. We didn't really have a young women's program at the time, but in the primary that were also pregnant, and everybody was due at the same time, and there was me. And I couldn't have another child. And it was so heartbreaking every single Sunday. And yet they still kept telling me, this is what God wants for you, is to have another child. And I'm like, well, if he wanted it so bad, why is it not happening? And I also was hearing things like, if men are not worthy of their priesthood, it can be taken away. And I'd always heard that men have the priesthood and women have motherhood. And therefore, I made the connection that apparently I was not worthy enough to be a mother. And so my motherhood had been stripped from me, which was very upsetting. And I just kept thinking, I just have to work harder. I just have to prove myself. So I was reading my scriptures like crazy, going to church, fulfilling callings, volunteering for everything. I was basically wearing myself out trying to prove myself to God, and I was not getting any response at all. And I think some of the hardest moments of my life were definitely when friends and family members would come and say, hey, I'm pregnant. Yay. And I'm like, that's the third time you've been pregnant since I've had my child.
You're talking about me. I'm sorry.
It's not our fault.
It's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
I just have a really gimpy body. Just, but there was quite a few people that continuously came, and I felt so miserable. Not that I wasn't happy for all of them, and I was, but for me, I was miserable because I thought, they're all doing it right. What am I doing so wrong? I was a mess and I was depressed and I was angry. It was the first time I can ever really, really remember being angry at God. And, I was holding on to every shred of faith I had in me. Like, I didn't want to give up.
Because the years that was happening, so that was between like 2006 through 2009-ish?
More or less.
Yeah, okay. More or less.
So that started everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, during that whole process was a little bit different for me. Of course, I wanted to have more kids as well, but after, I don't know if it was just that I had less patience or what, but I kind of lost that desire before Sarah did. And,
the desire to have more children.
Yeah, the desire to have more children. And more than anything, it just became an issue of watching her go through all this heartbreak and pain and not knowing what, I could do about it. And so, how that tied into the church for me was that I never had that moment that she talked about where I was angry at God. It was more like things just started losing the connection, that I used to have between, you know, the church narrative and my life as I experienced it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as she went through this infertility and I could see that she was miserable about all this stuff, and we would do everything that we could to pray and fulfill our callings and all of that stuff. And it wasn't changing. And of course we were also trying other things. We looked into foster care and adoption, mm-hmm. but at the time we were not all, incredibly financially stable, and nothing really worked out.
Nothing ever really seemed like the right fit anyways for us. So.
And of course, also we were still praying all the whole time, and we didn't get any spiritual confirmations that any of that was the right thing either. So
Without that spiritual confirmation, I just thought, well, I guess it's not going to happen.
Yeah. But eventually we did both come to grips with the fact that we were not going to have any more kids. And once that acceptance came, it made it a lot easier to sort of get on with life. And Sarah, I don't know if you had anything else to say about that specifically.
I did have an experience. I was pretty much done with the tears and the heartache. Like I said, I was very, very depressed over that issue. But I think one day I just decided I needed to really get over it. And I took a good hard look at my life and I thought, you know, I've got a great husband. I've got the most amazing kid in the world. Sorry for everybody else. Mine's the best. Cameron's amazing. And I had a great career, and I thought I just need to move on and put more value in what I already have instead of trying to create something that I didn't have, that it wasn't going to happen. So
now, Craig, did you see it as a sign of, like, Sarah saw her infertility as a sign of unworthiness? Did you feel the same way?
No, I didn't. And honestly, I didn't know that she felt that way until long after.
It wasn't something I shared with anybody, because it was like, it was so deeply shaming. I was like, I can't tell anybody, because if I tell my husband, I mean, he'll be so ashamed of me. Maybe he won't want to be married to me anymore. Like, it was pretty bad. I mean,
for me, it was less that it didn't make me think that we were unworthy, more that it just didn't compute. Like, I knew that if you were being righteous and all that, you were supposed to get blessings. And the fact that we, to our knowledge, were being righteous and weren't getting the blessings, it just was one of those things that I didn't have an explanation for, and just didn't make sense, but I just sort of put it on my shelf, as they say. And so that was sort of the backdrop for, you know, the situation that led to my faith crisis first, and then Sarah's. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Melanie, why don't you tell us what was going on with you during that time?
So going back a little ways, one of the things that also led to my exit of the church, but not for a while, was after I had my third child. I had some pretty severe postpartum depression, And it felt debilitating. It was awful. I was just so sad to the point of sometimes I just wished I wasn't even alive anymore. And I was so embarrassed about it too. I felt it was shameful that I have these three beautiful kids and I'm so sad all the time. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, I'm going through a horrible depression and it was just overwhelming because there's always church callings. And if people weren't calling me to do more for my calling or more for this, they were calling my husband. And, you know, he had callings that took a long time, but also he does a lot of like handyman type work. So ward members always know if they need something, they can call Mathis. And, you know, so.
Yeah, you guys had more, or Mathis at least definitely had some pretty time-consuming callings. And
at the time, I was stuff. Running two companies and working 60, 70, 80 hours.
Weren't you doing scouts then, too?
Scouts kind of jumped in right at the beginning of when we started having all of our major issues with the church.
So that was right after, because the bishop knew I had postpartum depression, and right after it had been a few months, like a okay time, I guess, to get over that, then he was right into a time-consuming calling.
He's like, okay, you're over it. Yeah. Now time to
okay,
slam
given,
it on you
we've
again.
Given you what we've designated as your time. And so then they called me into scouting. And at the time, what kind of started everything for us was our tempo recommends had lapsed. And so they wanted us to renew our tempo recommends. And because of business conditions and everything, I was slightly behind on my tithing. And so we went in and went through the interview. And as we're going to the church, I remember Melanie saying, well, what's going to happen? Because we haven't paid all of our tithing that we're supposed to pay. I was like, well, you're fine. You don't have a job. You don't have income. So it's, you know, worst case scenario, they're not going to give me a tempo recommend. So we went in and I went and explained everything to the bishop. And he's like, well, you need to pay your tithing for X number of months and then we can talk again. So I'm like, okay, well, that's whatever. I kind of figured on that going in. Melanie went in and when she came out, the bishop had said she couldn't have a tempo recommend because I didn't pay tithing. I was like, wait. Hold on. That's not how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, so I was sad about that because I still believed. And so it had just been a hard year. Yeah, so overwhelmed and trying to take care of kids because, like, without postpartum depression, just taking care of young kids is overwhelming in and of itself. But so everything was just piled on top of me. And it was just a hard time. And then after the tithing thing happened, we started looking on the internet to see, are there rules about tithing? And we found New Order Mormon and started reading on there for a few months.
I think it was that night, like within hours of coming back from the bishop's office you found it.
So this was after all that. Oh, and I should mention, I fully recovered from the postpartum depression. I'm fine.
So,
but, yeah, so back at the beginning of 2012, I think we were starting to question everything after he took my temple recommend because of you. But I'm not bitter, no.
Were you resentful towards Mathis at all?
Yes, because I remember she came home and you did this to me.
You shouldn't say that on here. Whatever, yeah.
It's done. Water under the bridge.
I know. We're good now, but
it was a good thing in the overall picture.
I know, right? So we started reading for months. I was more reading for months on New Order Mormon and starting to question. And then after months of that, I decided, I think I'm just going to stay, and kind of read a little more on Stay LDS and put it on the back burner and just decided to stay. So,
did you feel the same way, Mathis, about staying?
I didn't get really far into it. It was more with how busy I was with work and travel and scouts and everything else. I just said, let's just put this away, just leave it aside, do what we're doing for a while, and, you know, we can revisit it as needed, at a later time when it's not so
crazy.
But
he knew I had some issues with the church, and he was always very supportive. He would tell me, if you ever want to leave the church, I support you. Like, he wasn't at the point where he would, but he wasn't gonna divorce me or anything. Like, he said, yeah, I will, but it just seemed like a hard thing to do, to leave the church without your husband. And so I just stayed then for a few months.
So Melanie mentioned that was going on in the early part of 2012. And right about that same time, February and March of that year, I was pretty big into the political season. That was when, Romney and Obama presidential race was going on. And so, of course, on a lot of the articles online about Mitt Romney, they discussed Mormonism. And so I remember on one of the articles I was reading, I don't even remember what it was about, but someone on the comments, never read the comments, by the way. People should know that by now.
Bad idea.
But I was reading the comments anyway, and someone mentioned something about lying for the Lord and saying that Mormons do that all the time, and Mitt Romney is going to do that if he gets to be president as well. And that was a phrase that I had heard, seen a couple of times and thrown around there, but I was indignant. I was like, Mormons don't do that. Lying's wrong, and that has nothing to do with what we believe. And
we're honest in all our dealings.
Exactly. And so I decided to look up what they were talking about. I just Googled the phrase lying for the Lord, and lo and behold, it's actually a thing. And so that got me into researching about its origins within polygamy and how it was this historical thing that had to do with the church. And of course, one thing led to another, and I just went straight down the rabbit hole. I found MormonThink.com. I found the New Order Mormon Forum completely independently of Melanie. And so very quickly, I started getting involved with that and went through the same sort of reading binge that a lot of people report when they start finding out about all this new stuff that they never knew about.
So the funny thing was, though, like, you were actually posting on New Order Mormon. Mm-hmm. I was just reading.
Yeah, but you were a lurker.
Yeah, I was a lurker, but I was reading your things, not knowing it was you.
Because I remember her saying, hey, look, there's this guy in Layton. I'm like, that's right down the street, and it was you.
And I should mention, I had no idea what was going on. I was completely clueless. I did not know that Craig was looking or had doubts or anything.
Well, because it wasn't really that I had doubts at all. Like, when I found this stuff, I went into my research all the time mode with the intent to prove it wrong. And I was just had the idea, well, I just got to find out more and I'll figure this all out and everything will be good. And so I didn't want to bother Sarah with this because I was like, well, I don't know what this all means yet, but I'm sure it'll be fine. And I'm just going to wait until I got it figured out and then we can talk about it. And of course, that didn't happen. Very quickly, it went from this, that mindset where I'm going to prove this all wrong to, at some point, I just came to the realization. I let myself think, what if the church isn't true? And I remember very clearly that when I had that thought pop into my head, it was like, oh, everything makes sense now.
Mm-hmm.
And so as soon as I let myself come to that possibility, my belief was gone pretty much instantaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, I was still reading and everything. And this had taken place over, I don't know, a month or two.
And over those couple months, you were also posting things on Facebook that were just more liberal, or even maybe before then.
Well, actually, yeah, that is something we can talk about too. My politics had been changing for quite a while before my religious views had changed, because my degree was in economics, and when I went into that, I was a full-on conservative, fiscal and social, and I had the idea that, okay, well, I'm going to go into economics and prove that Ronald Reagan was right.
He just liked to prove everything.
That's just how
he's programmed.
Mind works.
All right, carry on.
It's not so much that that was my intention. That's just my expectation.
Mm-hmm.
But I, got into the classes and learned, oh, hey, this is more complicated. There are some good things about this other side, and there's evidence to back it up, and so I changed my opinion. That's also a part of my personality. Mm-hmm. I've like to get new evidence, and if something shows that I was wrong before, I will generally admit it. Hopefully. Waiting for Sarah to contradict me on that, but
I think that's accurate.
Cricket.
So when you started posting things that were more liberal, like even I a couple times wondered, are you getting less active? But
well, and that's a thing. Before that, it didn't have anything to do with the church. I was just finding out these new things and exploring new ideas. And in my own mind, I was just as faithful as I ever had been.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, like you said, once I came out and told people that I didn't believe, then came the accusations that, oh, this is not surprising. It was all, we saw it coming.
Well, yeah. I wondered for a while, but then you baptized Cameron and everything seemed normal. Right. And in the talks that were given, I thought, oh, I must have been wrong.
But even before that,
we're skipping ahead, though.
So I was completely clueless to what was going on with Craig. Completely. He did not talk about it with me at all until one night. When was it last?
It was in May of 2012.
May of 2012. And it was right after our anniversary.
Yeah.
And I remember we were there and in bed, and I knew you wanted to talk to me about something because your heart was racing. We were trying to watch a television show, and the whole time your heart was racing. And I'm like, this show isn't that exciting.
I know. And all through this whole time, of course, I had been on the New Order Mormon forums, and that place was a lifesaver for me because
yes.
I got lots of great advice and lots of people who had gone through this experience before, and they all said, you know, try and take it slow with breaking the news to your family members and all that. And here's some advice. Here's some things you can do. And so this whole time, of course, I had also been reading all of these horror stories of people who had done that and had their spouses divorce them or just terrible fallout from the decision. And so it was honestly the most terrifying thing I had ever done in my life, trying to get the courage to tell my wife that I no longer believed in the LDS Church, this, you know, completely all-encompassing worldview that we had both been immersed in for our whole lives. And I was just super nervous, and we got to the end of the show, and we're just sitting there silent for a few minutes, and was just like,
I didn't want to say anything. I knew he had something to say, and my heart was starting to race because I'm like, uh-oh, this is going to be bad.
So what were you thinking was coming?
To be perfectly honest, I thought you were going to come out and say that you had cheated on me or something.
Oh.
I mean, I had no idea what to think, and I was terrified. I was just like, I'm not going to say anything at all. Like, I'm just going to let you...
So what exactly did I say? Do you remember? I don't believe the church is true.
Yeah, you basically just came out right and said, I don't believe the church is true, which could not have shocked me more. I would have been less, I love you, honey. But I probably would have been less shocked if you had told me you were cheating on me.
That's at least within the realm of human possibility.
Yes, right. I mean, leaving the Mormon church, what?
Fits within the narrative.
Yeah, I could not even... I mean, it was not even on the radar. It was nowhere there.
Yeah.
And let's face it, I think you're pretty attractive. So, I mean, other girls might think you're attractive. And anyways, so when Craig told me that, well, there was a lot of shock involved, and I really didn't know how to handle it. And it was a pretty deep conversation we had that night. But in my mind, I had come up with three possible scenarios.
Well, first, before you go into that, I want to just say that the conversation we had was mostly just you listening. You let me talk. You let me get my thoughts out, and I really, really appreciated that. And so,
probably because that's actually very rare for me.
I was just going to say that. That's impressive,
not,
Sarah. You're a talker.
How did you do that?
I'm a little chatterbox, usually. I say what's on my mind, whatever. It goes in, it comes out, whatever.
You would never say anything that would bug anybody.
Never. I'm sweet and innocent. So I had three scenarios that went through my mind. The first is that I could divorce Craig and raise our son and remain in the church. And I really didn't like that scenario at all because I was deeply in love with my husband and still am, and I could not imagine life without him. It just, every time I thought about it, it just, ugh, that's how it felt. So the second scenario I thought of is that we could stay married and I could keep going to church and our son could keep going to church and Craig could do whatever he needed to do to stay happy. And we could live like that and just pretend that there was nothing big in between us. But as we've already established, I am a talker and I love to talk about everything. And I couldn't imagine not being able to talk about something that was a huge part of my life, namely religion and spirituality. I felt like, how could I keep something that big from my husband? But I wanted to respect him at the same time, and I didn't want to cross any boundaries and talk about something that he wasn't comfortable talking about. So there was like, I kind of felt like if we had lived that way, and I've known quite a few people who have and made it very successful for them, and that's great. But for me, I just, that would have been one very enormous elephant sitting in the room all the time.
That's the interesting thing is that you have some very close friends who are doing that and you just realize that that wouldn't work for you.
Right. And I seriously considered it. So that kind of option, I didn't really like that. So my third option was to find out what my husband had found out. Instead of just saying, no, you're wrong. Like Craig, it's kind of in my nature to find these things out for myself. And so on my own, I started reading books and searching the internet and kind of figuring stuff out for myself. And wouldn't you know it, look where I am today.
Well, to put this in perspective, we said that we had this conversation in May of 2012, and I think it was like 3 weeks later, there was a Mormon Stories conference in Salt Lake City. And I told Sarah about that thinking, well, I would like to go to this. And would this be okay with you if I went? And she said, I want to come too. And so 3 weeks after I had dropped this gigantic bomb on her, there we were at the Mormon Stories conference, sitting and listening to people talk about the church in terms that were not just the church is true, the church is true, the church is true. And for me, it was a really amazing experience. And you enjoyed it quite a bit too, didn't you?
I actually really loved it. Hearing the speakers, in fact, one of my favorite speakers, if she's listening, Jenna Reese, you're amazing. I really loved what she had to say, and she really struck a chord with me that day.
What was your motivation, Sarah? Were you thinking that you were going to strengthen your testimony and show Craig to be wrong, or were you just trying to support your husband and whatever?
I was really just going in for support, but a lot of it was really, I really wanted to know. I have a sincere desire to figure this out. Craig is a really smart guy. He was valedictorian of his high school. I mean, he's never done anything like me. I'm an impulsive person, incredibly emotional, impulsive. I just do everything on the fly, it seems. Craig has always been a very deep thinker, and it takes him a while to make decisions, which is great because we balance each other out very well. That's what made me think. I'm like, if Craig, who is such a deep thinker, I knew that Craig had studied the material so well and that he wouldn't have come to that conclusion without really good, solid evidence to back it up. And that's why I decided, I was like, well, there must be something there. So that's what really started me on my own faith journey at that time.
And so during that summer, we also met with our bishop sort of laid it all out for him, told him that during this time I was still attending church every week, still completely active, but we told the bishop that I no longer believed and that we were just working things through. And at that point, he was actually really cool. He said, well, you know, we're here for you. I don't really understand about any of this stuff, but, you know, keep coming and you're welcome and we'll help you in any way we can. And we even, at that point, you know, Sarah was still a pretty strong believer, even if she was investigating things. But that was right about the time that our son turned 8. And so we had to come up with a decision for whether or not he was going to be baptized and how that would go down.
Which was easy for us. We kind of left it up to our son and we asked him, do you want to be baptized? Do you want to follow the teachings of Jesus kind of thing? And he said, yes, he did. Granted, he was only 8, so it could be argued he just wanted to do what everybody else was doing. But he's a really smart kid, and when we asked him several times over the months, and he was pretty adamant, yes, he wanted to be baptized.
And we tried to make it clear to him, too, that not being baptized was an option. He didn't
yes.
have to do it if he didn't want to. But so once once we figured out that he did want to be baptized, we talked to the bishop again, and even though he knew I didn't believe, he was okay with me doing the baptism. And of course, at this point, no one else knew except for Sarah and our bishop that
right.
I didn't believe. We hadn't told any of my other family members, hadn't told Melanie and Mathis either. That comes later. But so, yeah, then we did the baptism. I baptized him and had a bunch of family come in and it was an interesting experience because even though I didn't believe that there was anything, you know, spiritual or anything like that going on, it was still something that I could bond with my son over, and having all the family come together, it was just nice. And I'm glad that even at that point, I was able to find some value in the religious ritual, even if it didn't have the same meaning to me that it had before.
Were you partly relieved that you continued with the baptism so the rest of your family was kept in the dark?
Yes, and that was a big part of the reason, because we just weren't ready at that point. We were still trying to figure things out between us as a couple as to how this would work, and we didn't want to have to add having to deal with family members and what leaving the church would mean to them. We didn't want to throw that fuel on the fire, as it were.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that happened. That was October of 2012. And mm-hmm. then I guess our story picked back up in December of 2012.
But in that time, we had found our way to stay. We had gone and set up the online tithing payment system and we're paying our version.
I don't know about this.
What is that?
So after she had lost her, Melanie had lost her recommend, we, you know, went and researched all the rules and everything else regarding tithing, and we discovered that you could pay tithing online with an online bill pay, and it would go straight to church headquarters, and all that your bishop would find out was that there was money received. And so kind of our shelf had cracked, and we had, you know, reinterpreted tithing our way, and so the bishop saw that our tithing receipts were coming in and gave us our temple recommends back, even though we had not paid what he would have considered a full tithe.
So here's an out for all you people.
Well, I'm not sure. I heard some rumors that they may not have that, or that that system has changed now. Do you know anything about that?
I haven't, because it hasn't really been top priority anymore.
Any changes after that were after we were gone.
Right, okay.
You forced the change.
Maybe.
It's all your fault.
I don't know. I can't verify that one way or another. So
but we had
some
read,
enterprising churchgoers can verify that for us.
Oh, sorry. We had read an official definition of what your tithing should be. And what was it? It was something about, like, paying on your surplus.
It's on your increase.
Increase.
Yeah, on your increase.
Okay. So we just interpreted that ourselves.
And so we just took it and we sent our online bill pay system in every paycheck, and the bishop, oh, I've been getting your tithing. Let's sit down and talk again. Great. So we had our recommends back and no one knew the wiser. And
yeah, we wanted those for weddings and things like that.
Oh, yeah, and that is also relevant.
That
throughout this whole time, even though my bishop knew that I didn't believe, he didn't take my temple recommend away or anything. I had gotten it renewed shortly before.
I'm surprised that the temple recommend and the baptism.
Yeah, it was.
That had a really cool bishop.
That shows the difference between the two bishops, that even in the church, the bishops interpret things their own way. Because you have somebody that says, I am not a believer. Okay, you can still do everything. But someone, you know, I'm struggling financially. Oh, you're out.
Yeah. And ours was a matter of, it was just the end of the year, and we're like, we need just a couple more months. Like, we were going to pay it. We just needed a couple more months, but.
Yeah, and by that time, I was not paying tithing anymore, although Sarah was sometimes.
I guess that's why they call it priesthood roulette.
You know, and then that brings us kind of into, it was December of 2012. We had our little boy's second birthday party, and Melanie and Sarah were talking, and I can't remember. I wasn't there, so I don't know the whole conversation.
We were just sitting at the table talking, and somehow it turned to, like, Craig's internet activity, I think, maybe a little bit. And and then topics about the church. And after kind of a long conversation, I said, sometimes I wish I could go inactive. And
I think I... Long dramatic pause. You need to talk to Craig right away. Like,
well, and also that was the conversation when she mentioned the New Order Mormon forum, right?
Yes. I think, Melanie, I think you brought up New Order Mormon.
Well, and that was after.
And I was just like, you need to talk to your brother, like, now?
Well, 2 weeks before we were down at Thanksgiving, and Melanie asked Craig point blank, so I saw on Facebook, you know, John DeLynn. How do you know him? And Craig was very dodgy and kind of brushed that one off.
I was like, I think I said something like, oh, I listened to a couple of podcasts of his, and I didn't go into any details whatsoever.
Because you thought I was just TBM and probably trying to get information.
You got
to
be real cagey when you're you know, trying to sniff out other disbelievers or whatever.
Yeah. So,
so the very next day, I think we sat down together.
Yes. Yeah. Cause I had said, I'll just call Craig. And you're like, no, we're coming over.
Yeah. I think I was that insistent too. I'm like, no, we're doing this tomorrow. Are you free tomorrow?
Seriously? Yeah. We might have a partner in crime. We are doing this right now.
This is an in-person type of conversation. Yeah.
I might have been a little bit excited to have somebody else who was like in the same boat. And I'm like,
anyway, so they came over, and the rest is history pretty much, but it was a 3-hour conversation, I think.
Mm-hmm. And so I just laid it all out to them, how I didn't believe the church was true anymore, and here's some of the, you know, broad overview pictures of why. And by the time we left, I told her, you know, here, go to mormonthink.com, and that's when she started phase.
My reading binge.
We were on the brink. We just needed a nudge.
Yeah.
So. Were you active at this time, Melanie?
Yes. Yeah, we were. So it was just after all everything that had happened, we just weren't super happy with the church and with the culture of the church. And then once we realized that it might not be true, it was kind of a relief. So we had, we just kept reading and reading. And then I started getting angry.
like a few hours later.
No. realizing that everything you'd ever believed growing up was based on fraud was maddening. So there was a lot of anger for a few months as we read and read books. And of course, generally what most people do who don't believe anymore. So.
And yet I was still in the church.
Sarah was still in.
I couldn't let go. I was holding on to that little thread of faith.
We all had to stay because that all crashed around the end of 2012, beginning of 2013. But we had a brother getting married in May in the temple, and we were just, none of us really wanted to still. It was the same thing as the baptism. We didn't want to do that. We didn't want to ruin his wedding with, oh, mom, like, two of your kids are gone. And, you know, like, it was just going to be drama before the wedding. So we all just kind of were going to hang low until that passed.
Yeah. But by that time, like, over those months, I was sort of gradually becoming less active and going, you know, maybe it started out, I'd skip a Sunday here or there. And then, I started going maybe twice a month. And, then after the, Cameron's baptism, I really stopped going as often. And maybe would only show up, once a month or so. But by then, since I knew our bishop and I knew that he was pretty much leaving us alone, I didn't have the same impetus to keep going for that. Mm-hmm. And, so by the end of 2012, I just decided to stop going altogether. Also, by that time, I had found the, Unitarian Universalist congregation up in Ogden that, and I really
awesome.
Liked that. Yeah, I enjoyed going there. And so, of course, I wasn't willing to go to church twice in a Sunday, usually.
Fair enough.
And yet I did.
How many months did Sarah go to both?
So actually, I was still quite active at church. I had a calling. I was the...
You were the...
Chorister.
Word chorister, yeah.
Not the chorister. Is that what yes. they call
sacrament
it?
Sacrament meeting.
I led the music in sacrament meeting, and yeah. I absolutely loved that calling. It was one of my dream callings. Music has always been super important to me, and I really got into it, and everybody enjoyed watching me up there really get into these sacrament meeting notes.
Even though they're boring.
So here's something crazy that I would do. As I said, I basically will say anything that comes to my mind, and I don't often think about what I'm going to say before I get up and say it. So fast and testimony meeting rolls around, and I got up in front of the entire ward and told them that I was having doubts about the church and that I wasn't sure it was true. And it was terrifying to actually say that. It's one of the very few times that I can remember speaking in public and being ridiculously nervous, but I don't even know why I got up and said it, but I did. And it was great because afterwards, so many members of the congregation came up to me and they're like, Sarah, I said, thank you so much for saying that. We've had our own doubts. It's nice to feel like we're not alone. And that was shocking.
Yeah.
It was, but it felt really good that even in my doubts, I felt like I had people who understood a little bit of where I was coming from and who didn't outright reject me. That was really important. I've always been quite a people person. And part of my whole journey was if I left the Mormon church, I would lose all my friends, which was a terrifying thought for me. But getting up there and telling people that I wasn't sure about the church anymore, and then they were just very welcoming, lots of hugs and a lot of people just telling me that they really appreciated me, really appreciated having me there and that they were there to support me. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't think we have the typical Utah Mormon ward.
We have cool people there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the next step was coming out to family.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we?
So there was a wedding. It was hard.
That was what the tip of the iceberg.
That was kind of what got me leaning over because this particular wedding took place in the exact same temple in the exact same room that Craig and I were married in, mm-hmm. which seems very exciting because it was the first time we'd actually been back to that temple. I think
you're right. I don't think we'd been back to the Las Vegas temple.
Yeah, and this was right after our 10-year anniversary. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right after a big 10 years. So I was kind of excited in a way to be able to go back there and just kind of experience it all over again. I thought it would be kind of romantic, but it could not have been a more different experience. When Craig and I were married, we were both the oldest in our family to be temple worthy, I guess. Everybody else was either too young or they weren't members of the church or they weren't active in the church.
I'm the oldest in my family, so I was just the first to.
Yeah. I have an older brother who has also left the church, but.
But it was so different to go back to a temple ceiling as like four of us didn't believe, but we just didn't want to cause all the drama. So like,
I was still trying to believe, but walking in that room and seeing when Craig and I got married, it was quite a big room And we had so few people there. And I remember when we got married, it was just kind of like, oh, nobody's here for my wedding. This is kind of sad and lonely.
Well, because, you know, your side of the family was scattered all over the country.
They're all over the place.
And a lot of them couldn't come. And a lot of the rest of them weren't even Mormon.
They weren't.
And
yeah. So we had a lot of people that could not be there. Or like all the siblings on both sides of the family could not be there.
Just because they were younger.
Just because they were younger. Or as in my brother's case, he was still active at that time, but he wasn't, he had never gone through the temple. But, in the case of Craig and Melanie's brother and his wedding, it was standing room only. It was so packed. There were so many people there. And I thought, what? I got gypped. But it was, I don't know about y'all, but I kind of felt like I was sitting in on a funeral.
It was so somber. There was no celebration to it. Everyone was quiet, of course, because it's the temple, but just sitting there, no one was even smiling. Well, at times they were, but it just was odd to look around and it was just so quiet. And you're like, guys, this is a wedding. You know,
I know. I wanted to get up and shout and be like, yay for them. Then, they're getting married.
In the temple, you have to be so quiet. You can't even pat anyone on the back when you hug them, you know? So it felt odd. It didn't feel like a wedding. And that was a change because that was how weddings always had been.
Right. It's not like that was the first time we'd been to a temple ceiling.
So there was a definite change there. And I remember Sarah kind of coming out of there fuming, like, I don't think I can stay in this church.
It was kind of like what was said. I don't think we mentioned this before, but my job is as a photographer and I do a lot of weddings and so I see all different kinds of things, but what I love about weddings is the emotions that go into it and just all the love and the sharing of vows and everything. And there was none of that at this temple ceiling. It was all about, in order to be a good husband and wife, you need to serve the church in all things. And there wasn't anything, I don't recall any time where he might have mentioned like, be good to each other. It was all be good to the church, like be strong, be active.
Well, I think he did
fulfill your callings.
I think he did finally get to that, put in a few sentences about that about 20 minutes into his, you know, half hour.
But I thought it was odd. It just felt weird for me and I was very upset by it. And yeah, I basically walked out of there and I thought, that's it. This is a cult. And it was just, I was so angry. And I still stayed in the church.
Yep. You were still going.
Not for very long.
Not for very long after that.
But I was still, I still
It still took
God.
Something else to completely drive her away.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you really just had to beat me over the head with a stick to get me to move. I was so stubborn about it because I still felt like I could not leave it. I could not leave it alone. And even though I was barely hanging on by that point.
Well, and also you had been coming from time to time with me to the UU church.
Yes. Yes. Which I loved. And mm-hmm. I was going to that church for the first time. And gosh, I can't even remember. I felt like I could really be myself. And all the thoughts and feelings that I always had all pretty much all through my life, I could finally think and feel without feeling any guilt, which was great. I could love everybody equally. And I love being there. It's really great. Go to the Unitarian Church, everybody. It's awesome.
And for Mathis and I, we were still trying to keep up or just stay active because we had an aunt and uncle in our ward and we just didn't want to have drama.
We weren't ready for all the family to know, and we knew, okay, if all of a sudden we disappear.
It was so frustrating because I wanted to stop going, and we had decided to go like every other week, and we mm-hmm. had excuses because I was actually teaching a primary class with his aunt, and so every week I'd be like, oh, I can't be here next week because I have a baby blessing or this and this and this.
Had to keep coming up with new excuses, new and interesting excuses.
Yeah, and then
excuses.
This aunt got put into the primary presidency, and they had a meeting about me. I hear like, oh, Melanie hasn't been coming as much. Her kids are going inactive.
And so
like,
they started assigning our kids all the talks and prayers. And it's all right, this isn't going on long enough.
And at that point we said, they're not giving talks because we're not coming back. Thank you.
I guess that does it.
So yeah, that was shortly, cause we got back from Vegas from the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And then due to a series of unfortunate events had to inform your family.
Yeah. My mom was coming up. I don't remember
all
the details.
I'll still take the blame. I didn't lock the cabinet up.
Oh yeah. For some reason she was dropping off something and put it in my house, which normally wouldn't be a big deal, but she set it in our office and we had our coffee cabinet open. It's so dumb because we always hide we had our coffee maker was in a cabinet that was in his office and all our coffee was kept there so nobody would see because we were
still
in the closet.
That cabinet had a lock on it too, by the way.
But we didn't think anyone was coming in our house. We weren't home. And so she saw it and all the coffee. And that night I just called her. We all did.
Yep. We all came over. It was like, we're having a crisis.
Which is so dumb. You'd think it was meth or something that she found. It was coffee.
Yeah.
But it kind of is telling.
The ironic part was at the end of the conversation, she never even realized what it was.
Like, yeah. It was a Keurig, so it was a single serve or whatever.
Yeah, it didn't have the traditional coffee pot.
Yeah, my mother is definitely that type of Mormon.
I know.
She didn't even recognize it.
She's the sweetest, most wonderful person in the world.
Absolutely.
Completely innocent, and I love her to death.
She didn't know what a K-cup was.
Well, I know you're joking about it, but it's your mother. I imagine there are a lot of feelings and concern for her.
Oh yeah. At the time, it was not a joking matter. That's for sure.
There were many, many tears.
And it was hard because she was up visiting another one of the brothers. So she was not at home with dad. And
Cause she's from Henderson and she was up in Utah away from her husband. Mm-hmm. And we called her and kind of sprung this on her. None of us were ready to be out yet.
Yeah.
And so it was hard for her. And we, of course, knew what we were doing. We're about to go break our mom's heart. You know, it's sad. And that's exactly what happened. Like, she was heartbroken and she cried, and we tried to explain the best that we could that we're just adults choosing our religion.
Mm-hmm.
But
once,
it's not that simple.
Once we had that conversation and, you know, mom was really broken up about it, she, of course, called our dad, and he actually had a really interesting response, and he was the one to pretty much calm her down and just say, you know what, they are adults, they are able to make their own decisions, and it's still going to be okay. They're still good people, they're still our children. And
yeah, and he kept telling her, remember, they're in their 30s. They're allowed to do this.
But yeah, you had more of a conversation with mom at that time, you know, after.
Yeah, afterwards, that, so. She came around. And of course, like I said, she was heartbroken, but now she's not.
Right.
Like, she's fine now. And we've had so many conversations, me and my mom, about it, and she's fine. And I liked that my dad's reaction, the first thing he said to me, because he called me after he found out that we had left the church, first thing he said was, I love you. And that was nice, because we didn't get that reaction from the in-laws, but he said that he's aware of some of the issues with the church, and they're compelling, and he understands. He understands why people would leave over these things.
Yeah, which was a complete surprise to us, because, of course, none of these issues were ever brought up in at home when we were growing up.
But just that reaction. I wish everyone could just have that sort of reaction. I love you. I understand. He even went as far as to say, I support you later on, like, because you wouldn't think that people would say that. I just wanted them to accept us. But he's like, no, I support you. And he felt like we were coming from a place of honesty, not just out there trying to sin or go do drugs or, you know, we're just trying to be honest with ourselves and find truth. So,
but, you know, like we mentioned before, he is a convert. And so he wasn't always with the mindset that the LDS church is the only one.
And he's a psychologist.
Yes.
So not everyone has that.
Yeah.
So that was nice from him. Our in-laws had an intervention once they found out and came over, and I was mad.
Did they feel you led your husband astray, Melanie?
No, because what we...
They did wonder if Craig did, though.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
Well, it was kind of a... Because this was in the weeks after we had told Melanie's family, and it just got to be like, we just want this done. We want to tell people what's going on.
And well, and
we
also, your family is more, shall we say, intrusive than maybe ours.
I really hope they never hear this.
All of my siblings, we all live within 10 miles of each other. We all go up to mom's at least every other week, yeah. And everyone's right there. All of our kids are all the same ages. Yeah. So maybe
intrusive isn't the best word.
We're very involved with each other. And,
here, yeah.
You know, there are some boundary problems.
So, yeah, they came over with the mindset of we're parents, you're children, you're about to touch a hot stove. And they said that quite a few times.
Yeah, that's how they compared
it. So it makes you feel like, oh, thanks for this, like the confidence in us, you know, they thought we were being impulsive and rash. And we kept telling them, you know, this has been a long process, but because we didn't go to his dad, who is the father and the patriarch of the family, he mentioned, then we were being rash because how could we make a decision like this without him? And I said, do you go to your in-laws to make life decisions? And he does not. So yeah, it was just, it turned into an argument, and I felt like it hurt the relationship.
When they were the only ones, and they didn't react, try and sugarcoat, I guess. They didn't react the best, but it was not handled well when
we told
everyone.
But you gotta also expect that people are gonna be shocked about something like that. So give them the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, they had a bad reaction. But
it's certainly not the worst story that we've heard.
Right.
That's for sure.
Well, and I look at it, it's like we send an email out to my parents' siblings, and then my one set of grandparents lives just down the road from us. So we see them all the time. And I think it was 2 minutes after I clicked the send button, my grandpa called and said, I've got two questions or two things. He said, first, is this real? And when I said, yes, this is how we fail, he's like, okay, we love you, and it better not change our relationship at all.
Nice.
You know, and that was, you know, and it was a great way to accept us. And then I think it was within the hour, all of my siblings called. He said, well, this doesn't really change anything, and we're on board with whatever you're doing, and you're still you. You're still our brother.
That was the hurtful thing about your parents, Mathis, was that numerous times your dad asked, what do you want from us, or something to that effect? And all I would say is, I just want you to accept us. You don't have to agree with us. Just accept us. And not once did they agree to that. So that was hurtful. But again, that was a while ago. So I think we've all just moved on.
And as far as our family, pretty much the rest of their reactions have been good as well. Like, I don't know of anyone that has really, you know, nobody has rejected us over this or anything. And
I've had a few siblings ask why I left the church, and I go into details about the Book of Mormon, and then it's almost like, oh, I don't know if I wanted to know that, you know? but just makes them sad.
But then there's also been, you know, some people that we won't name that have decided to look into things further as well.
Yes, and that's awesome.
Even if they don't end up where we are, it's great because they now have a better understanding of how they can contextualize this stuff in their lives. And
yeah, it's just nice for people to be informed about
exactly.
The facts.
They can determine truth for themselves, like what speaks to them.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about everybody else's parents. I guess I get to talk about my parents.
Guess so.
Yes, we did end up telling my parents. Now, I have an older brother who had already left the church. Although nobody really knew why he left, he just kind of stopped going. We were sort of left
from what we were aware of anyway.
From all the conversations, nobody in the family was really all that clear about why my brother left the church.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't talk about it. He's a very private person, and that's fine. But we were left to draw our own conclusions, which actually ended up being nowhere near the reasons why he left. But when I came out to my parents, it was difficult, but I kind of felt like I needed to tell them. I'm not really sure why. I think I probably could have not told them and it would have been okay, but they're my parents and I love them and I wanted them to know And like I said, I talk about everything. We've already established this.
Well, it's just hard having such a big secret.
Yeah.
Right. And like I said before, I talk about so many things and I couldn't talk about what I had learned about at the UU church that day without my parents being like, why were you at a different church that day? I needed for myself to talk to my parents, and it actually went pretty well. I think.
It went okay, I guess.
That's
there
debatable.
wasn't any breakdown. Like, they weren't emotional or anything. They were, pretty much like, you're making a mistake, but, they didn't say, you know, we're going to disown you or anything. Did they say, you know, we'll still love you and all that? I'm trying to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They were very clear on that. Especially my dad. He had always said, no matter what, you're my daughter and I love you. You can make your own choices. He didn't agree. My dad was a convert and he was like fully into the church. He loved the church. And he was sad that I had made the choice to leave it. Interestingly enough, though, both of my parents later, after the initial conversation, they both came back to me and they said they weren't surprised because they'd known for a long time that I was unhappy with the church, which surprised me because I didn't know I was unhappy with the church. So in a way, I was kind of annoyed by that because I'm like, wait, you knew I wasn't happy. You knew why I wasn't happy, and yet you didn't tell me why I wasn't happy.
No, it's just making assumptions at that point.
Yeah. So I think it was
kind of annoying.
It was a little bit, aw, darn it. I could have been out of this a long time ago. So what actually was the end of the end for me? One Sunday, I had gone to church just like normal. I had walked into right before sacrament meeting, and the bishop stopped me and said, hey, I want to speak with you right after sacrament meeting. And I said, oh, that would be great. Okay. And I thought it was going to be something about visiting teaching, and because I had just been speaking with my visiting teaching companion, who was also the Relief Society president, about visiting teaching and such. And I thought that's what it was going to be about. And I went up, and I led the music, and it was great, and I had people come up to me afterwards and tell me how glad they were that I was there leading the music. So I was feeling pretty good about myself until I walked into the bishopric's office. And it was the bishop and both of his counselors. And they were all sitting behind the desk. And I was on the other side in a chair all by myself. Craig wasn't there. He wasn't even invited. Didn't even know what was going on. And I was sitting there, and they pretty much opened up by, well, I had what I felt was a very spiritual experience, and they had basically taken that spiritual experience of my own and threw it back at me, saying.
So this is something that you had shared with him months
prior? I had shared it with the bishop, but not with the counselors.
Oh, and he shared with them?
Yeah, and he shared with the counselors. Without my knowledge or permission.
And also, you had shared it with him like a year prior to that.
Yeah, it had been a while. So that was very upsetting that he tried to reinterpret my experience for me and throw it back at me just to show how wrong I was by having the doubts that I was having. And right away, I went immediately onto the defensive and I said, hey, look, this is my experience, not yours. Like, you do not have my permission to interpret my spiritual experiences for me. And he kind of left it at that. He's like, oh, okay. And he went right into it and he says, well, we're releasing you from your calling. And I said, well, why? I love my calling. It's the most amazing thing ever. And they said, well, you don't
believe.
The
only thing I still like.
I know.
It's the only reason I'm here.
And they basically said, well, you don't think the same way we do anymore. So you are no longer worthy to hold this calling, which was very upsetting because I'm like, I just lead the music, guys. It's not like I'm teaching anything.
Is this the same bishop that allowed Craig to baptize?
Yep.
Yes.
Same one.
Same
guy.
Same
which
bishop.
Is why it was such a huge surprise.
So Craig this was says, I don't believe, okay, you can baptize your son. You say, I have doubts. Oh, you can't wave your hand in front of everyone.
Yes. Yeah. The difference is
sex?
I'm very vocal.
Oh, the vocal. Okay.
I'm pretty sure that the fact that she's a woman probably has something to do with it.
That might have had something to do with it, but I think it was more the fact that I'm a vocal person. And
really,
I'm,
though? Because it's not like you're talking while you're leading.
She but did,
I had,
though.
But
she
I had stood up several times. In front of the other
comments that had been made.
Yeah, so I had been very vocal.
And that was different for me. Like, the most I ever said while I was going was, I think, one time in Sunday school, I, you know, pushed back against something, you know, conservative that they had said. Uh-huh. But then, you know, after that, Sarah told me that I should probably stop going to Sunday school, which I was more than happy to agree to.
Twist my arm.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, so everybody in the ward knew what was going on with me. And I wasn't afraid at all to answer questions or speak up or anything. And I think that had a lot to do with it.
Probably.
Although at the time I didn't really think about that. All I could think about was that I was being punished for having doubts. And I'm like, Joseph Smith had doubts.
Take Come that.
What religion are you part of? Anyways. So, at this point I was pretty upset, obviously, and I basically said, hey, look, I have doubts a lot about some things, but there's still so much that I love. I love the ideas of families, and I loved visiting teaching and home teaching. In fact, we still have our visiting teachers and home teacher come over every month, and we love having them there. Because
they don't talk about church. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, our home teacher doesn't anymore, and her visiting teachers have learned better.
Like I said, I'm very vocal. I speak what's on my mind.
So in that meeting, were you kind of fighting to keep your calling, or did you know it was just gone?
I basically told him, if you release me from my calling, you probably won't ever see me here again.
And their reaction?
And they said, well, that's how we know we're making the right decision.
What?
Yeah.
They're awesome guys.
Visitors welcome, right?
And then at some point in the conversation near the end, they were like, well, we don't even know what your doubts are. You keep saying you have all these doubts and you won't even talk about it. And I'm like, well, for good reason, because most people who find out this information have a faith crisis. Do you want to have a faith crisis? And I said, I really don't, you know, I told them quite sincerely, I respect you guys enough that I don't want to put that on you. And they were very insistent. The bishop in particular was very insistent. And I said, fine. Here's all the reasons why the Book of Mormon is not true. And I spent a good probably 10 minutes talking about that. And right afterwards, one of the counselors looked me straight in the eye. And he said, so you're willing to listen to logic and reason more than you are your own faith?
Well, yes.
Yes.
Yes, I am.
Yes, I am.
That was the major facepalm moment, and it was pretty much done from there.
Yeah, that was the moment. Right there at that moment, I'm like, and out. And I never went back.
Yeah.
I think I've gone to some Relief Society activities a few times, but I've never been back to church.
Now, after that, we actually, Sarah and I put together a letter, that we mailed to the bishop, even though he only lives like next block away, just saying, you know, here are the reasons why this meeting was inappropriate. And if you ever have a situation like this again, where you're talking to people with doubts, here are the likely results of treating it like this. And here are some things that, suggestions for things that you can do better if you actually want to connect with them and help them. And so, we never talked to the bishop again about that afterwards, but, not too long following that, we did get a call from the stake president, and, he asked to meet with both of us, which
he actually only asked to speak with me, but I invited you along.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
And he was perfectly okay with it. I am not doing this again.
I know. I was like, I am not doing this by myself again. Are you kidding me? So I went in to meet with the stake president, and I brought Craig, and our stake president he's such a great guy. I could not say enough good things about him. He was really happy to see Craig there. And
yeah, that was the first thing he said, actually. He's like, oh, good. I'm glad that Craig's here too. He should be here.
Right, so. Right. So it was wonderful. And he apologized on behalf of the bishopric and said, you know, that was definitely not appropriate and was not handled very well on their part, but we respect you both and we love having you. And he basically came out right and he says, you know what? I understand your decision. I respect you as individuals, as people. He says, if you would like to resign, just let me know. I will put it through without any questions asked.
Mm-hmm. Which we haven't resigned.
We have not resigned.
We don't really.
But it's on the table. And he said, you know, he would make sure that it went through quickly and smoothly. And that, if that was our desire, and we told him we were very happy. At that time, he did tell us that our temple recommends had been, revoked, which was fine because.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we weren't going
to. They were right about to expire. I think mine was just about to expire anyways. And so I was just like, it's not a big deal. Have no intention of ever going back to the temple. So it was all good. So it was actually a really great, very positive meeting with the stake president. He was just wonderful. So
I think our interaction after we told all of our family, we sent our bishop an email that just basically said, yeah, we're not coming back. You're not going to see us.
He was fine, except there was one negative interaction, but that was months later. That was last Christmas. I went back to sacrament meeting just for the hour, just me, because I wanted to hear the Christmas songs. And he, of course, saw that I was there and, oh, hi, Melanie, good to see you. And then at the end of sacrament meeting, he got up and bore his testimony. And the whole thing was, if you are ever doubting the scriptures, this is what you can do. This is how you can feel the spirit through prayer to know the truth of things and, that you can use faith beyond just reason and logic. And he started saying everything that he had said to me personally in sacrament meeting and
not helping
everyone.
Bishop.
Yeah. Everyone knew I was there. At least the people that could see me. I was pretty clearly the only doubter there. So I was kind of humiliated. So even my sweet mom, who is so devout, after she heard about that, she's like, just don't go back to your ward. Okay. So that was the one bad thing. But other than like, he was, when we were leaving, he was fine and nice. And
he's actually stopped two or three times to make sure that we're not receiving unnecessary harassment from ward members. And he's like, you know, just so you know, if anyone comes to bug you or visit you, it's not being sent by us. And
that's
if there's anything we can do to stop, then
sacrament meeting crap, but whatever.
So, and he's handled it well. They've asked, you know, our home teachers still come, but they follow the rules of there's no church talk. So we talk football and sports. And
you know what? Whenever our home teacher comes over, I definitely get the distinct impression that he's kind of glad he doesn't have to do a lesson. Cause, you know, that would have been me when I was a member too. I would have loved to just not have to worry about that.
So anyway, I think that about wraps up our story. Was there anything else?
Well, there was the last part.
Oh, yeah. You gotta get back to your
letter. Oh, yeah.
So, my dad, of course, we told my parents that we left the church, and my dad was really supportive, and he was very clear that, you know, he loved me no matter what. And that was great. Shortly after we told them that we were leaving the church, he found out that his cancer had come back. And he passed away this past October. And that was such a hard thing for me to watch, because here I was and I had pretty much dropped so much of what I had believed in for all my life, including the idea of an afterlife. It was so hard because I didn't know what was really going to happen with my dad. And to this day, I don't know. Like, will I ever really see him again? I have no idea. I try not to think about it too much because it just makes me really sad. But I do remember right before he passed away, the cancer was pretty bad. He had actually undergone a bone marrow transplant, which was highly successful, but unfortunately at the same time he contracted a fungal infection in his lungs, which took him very, very rapidly within a matter of weeks. And he was on life support, and we had to make the incredibly difficult decision to remove him from life support. And the whole family was there. Pretty much everybody had come into town except for one brother who couldn't get away. But I remember walking into the room that morning, and my dad was there he was unconscious, and he was hooked up to the life support and all kinds of tubes everywhere. And I just walked up to him and I said, "Dad, I'm here." And he turned and he opened his eyes and he looked right at me and he held up his hand for me to take. And he squeezed my hand and he nodded his head. And I asked him, "Are you ready to go?" And he said, he didn't say anything. He just nodded his head and he closed his eyes again. And for me, that was such a great moment for my own spirituality. Even though I don't know what's going to happen in the life hereafter, it was wonderful for me to know that in his final moments on this earth, he still loved me. Despite the decisions that I had made, that I was still his daughter. That's something I'm going to take with me for the rest of my life.
That's beautiful, and that's what I think everyone fears when they make this big decision, that they're going to lose the love of their parents or their siblings or friends. And to hear that in general, most of you have received a good response, mm-hmm. and especially their story of your father and through it all, but especially in the end, you felt his love no matter what decision you'd made. And that's what we all hope for, is that we have that understanding and the love.
Mm-hmm. As for right now, as we mentioned, we are pretty active in our UU church, and it's great going there because there isn't the same sort of emphasis on beliefs. You know, I'm an atheist and I'm completely welcome there just as much as anyone else is. And it's not even something that is even really brought up, but it is a group of people that we can, you know, get together with and talk about how to just be better people. And the same sort of thing applies to the groups that we've been in. As we mentioned before, the New Order Mormon Forum was instrumental for both me and Melanie. And mm-hmm. since then, yes, you were there for a while as well. Since then, we sort of migrated to a lot of the Facebook groups, but especially being here in Utah, of course, anytime you get a critical mass of Mormons, you're also going to run into quite a few ex-Mormons. And it's been great to have that community and people who get you on a really deep level and know what you've been through. And so that's part of the reason why I wanted to, probably why we all wanted to come on and be on this Voices podcast is, because hearing other people's stories have been really helpful to me in processing this whole transition. And it's just really nice to know that there are people out there that know what you've been going through, and also to see them come out the other side. Because when you're going through it, it's not always clear that there is another side. It's all encompassing. It seems like the world is falling down around you, and you don't know what is going to come after, or if there even is an after to come. And so having the example of people who you can look to and say, hey, they left the church and they're still happy, healthy people mm-hmm. was just a lifesaver for me.
I think it's great to have people. I've gone to all sorts of different meetups and lunches and mm-hmm. to, you know, as we were going through everything, just like you were saying, Craig, to have people just put their arm around you and say, hey, it's going to be okay. You're going to come out of this and you're not going to have a giant negative effect in your life.
Ex-Mormons are awesome.
Yeah. But I travel a lot for work, and everywhere where I've gone, I've put things out on Facebook. Hey, I'm in Denver this night and who wants to meet up? And just the support that all the different people are willing to give to someone that they've never met is just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and I've said, I'm such a people person, and part of, like, one of the big reasons why I wasn't willing to let go of the church is I thought, I'm not going to have any more friends.
Well, yeah, like, you're afraid you're going to lose your whole social life.
Everything. And, yeah. I couldn't imagine that. For me, that would be like the end of my world. I can't imagine a life without people in it, my friends. And interestingly, not only have I kept all of my Mormon friends, but I've met a lot of new, awesome people everywhere. I'm like more social now than I ever have been in my entire life.
Yeah, that I was not expecting, because I'm not exactly that way. I'm not that social as part of my general nature. But going through this whole process and just seeking out that support from other people has the added benefit of, oh, hey, you get to connect with all of these people on a pretty deep level, and now you have a whole lot of more friends.
Yeah. So. And for me and you, Craig, and I guess all four of us, we bonded more.
Yeah,
we
definitely.
Became a lot more close.
Our relationship has grown a lot more than it was before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the wine is nice.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Wine. Wine is delicious to the
And so is no. Pendleton's whiskey. Thank you, Mathis. That was awesome.
You guys have fought me for too long. You finally agreed.
I do like alcohol.
On that note, drink more wine.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your stories and the outlook you all have, and I can tell everyone that you are happy. All of you have smiles and have a good relationship, and so that's what we hope for everyone. And I do want to say, if you have a couple dollars you want to throw into Mormon Expression Voices or Mormon Expression or whatever you feel you can relate to, that would be appreciated, because this does cost some money and we want to keep providing it for people to help them. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks.